Hey, Pride fam, get ready for a brand new episode of
Pride the Podcast,
featuring extra special guests, the cast and creative team of Dix the Musical. So grab yourself an hot apple cider and take a little time to hang with Pride.
And we are joined today by three guest co-hosts. We are so excited. And I'm going to let these gentlemen actually introduce themselves. Go right ahead, Josh. Let us know.
Hi, I'm Josh Sharp.
And I'm Aaron Jackson.
And I'm Carl St. Lucie.
And if you guys are wondering, they are the creative team behind Dix the Musical. You have got to run to the theaters and see it. We're going to be talking about all that today, plus many more. We want to give special thanks to our friends over at Rehab Entertainment for bringing us back today. So, everybody, how are you doing? We're all in different places. It feels like when The View was in COVID and they all had like six little boxes. So everybody's in their own little box. So referring to my regular co-host, Brayden, how's things going in your world?
I love dicks.
Me too.
And the musical.
Same.
The musical's so good. No, I'm good. I'm just so excited to have these three fellas on today because I want to get all up in their dicks. Okay, I'm going to stop.
No, please keep it going.
No, we're going to be dicking around all day. So it's going to be great. Ashley, how's things going with you? I haven't seen you in like a week.
Oh, you know, just, you know, over here working. And thinking about dicks. I mean, isn't that what everybody does? Work and dick.
Well, it is. And I can't.
This is work appropriate language, just so everyone knows.
Absolutely.
It is work appropriate. I mean, well, you know, not to give spoilers away, but I was very excited to know about the size of the dicks at the very beginning of the movie. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. So, John, tell us, how's your dick?
No. Thank you. Finally, we've been doing a lot of press. This is always the opening question, not just on the Pride podcast.
As it should be.
Good. Yeah. We're having fun out here. You know, we're having fun showing this film to people. So
it's a really, really amazing film. We could not stop laughing, and we didn't know what to expect going into it. You know, seeing the trailer and everything, you see, like, you guys, you see...
You knew it was Nathan a family Lane. Film.
Yeah. Well, no, I knew it would be fun, but then just the twist, which we're not going to spoil for anyone who hasn't seen the movie yet. You guys have to get out and see it. It was so great that when you got to the end of it, I was just like, of course, this is how it is. It was so well done. And to have the talents of Nathan Lane and Megan Mullally, I'm sure was... a blessing for you guys and Megan
the Stallion.
The Stallion. How was that, Aaron, for you? Like, how was that having these powerhouses come in and support this film?
Oh my God. Well, we've been saying to people, and this sounds like such a like a line you feed the press, but they were truly all of our like first choices. We were so like the parts were written for them, especially Megan and Nathan Mullally. And then the Stallion was just sort of like, you have a chance to get a big pop star because the shoot date was very small for her. So it's like, you could get a big star. And they were like, swing for the fences. Like, who in your wildest dreams that you know will never say yes? And we were like, well, what about Megan Thee Stallion? What the hell? And then she said yes. And we were like, what the fuck? So it was a thrill. And they were all the whole cast, everyone was just so amazing to work with and really committed and down to have a good time and really understood the piece, which is a little out there.
Aaron, wait, tell the story of when you got the call about this.
Oh, yeah, I got the call from our producer that Megan Thee Stallion had said yes, and my lover was in the other room and thought a family member of mine had died because I just kept going, oh my God, no, oh my God, oh my God. Came in, was like, what happened, babe?
You were like, nothing, but life is starting. And I can imagine for you, Carl, to be able to be one of the co-composers to write music for these people. How was that for you?
Oh, I mean, it's been a total delight. I mean, I was with these boys almost 10 years ago working on this. And, you know, It was very easy then, and this wasn't as easy as it was then, but it was easy in a lot of ways and really fun. And I feel lucky that this is kind of my first big piece, because I feel like it really gets into the DNA of like the stuff that I love to do. Do you know what I mean? And the kinds of collaborations I like to do.
Carl, can I tell them how we met?
Please do.
So, you know, like, Aaron and I, like, we're like, we want to do a two-man musical. This is back when it was a stage show, which keeps getting referred to as off-Broadway, the most generous way to describe it at all. It was a UCB show. We did it for negative money. We lost money. It was not an equity contract. Oh, no. So UCB was in the basement of a grocery store. You know what I mean? So when people are like, off-Broadway, I'm like, y'all are being nice.
You're like, thank you.
Off-Broadway. And add nine more offs. You know?
And none of us collected a single check, you know? No. This was not.
Oh man!
Like, Aaron and I were like, we want to write a musical, and we want to do like a two man show. And we're like, who do we know that writes music? And I was performing with the children's theater group where Carl was a composer and accompanied us with. And the day I met Carl, they walked into rehearsal of children's theater, and I overheard them being like, smoking a cigarette, like, well, I broke up with my thruple, and I was truly like, who is this queer? I gotta meet them. And so then, of course, then we like hit it off and we're like, Carl, would you want to write music for this crazy show we're writing? And then, you know, now here we are.
Well, you know what's crazy about that, too, is that like when you actually talked to me about the show, you would run into me on the subway.
Yes.
So it was as if you were like, hey, you want to write a show, you know? So it was,
that is so amazing.
It's called stalking.
Yeah,
I have a question. I want to back up. I want to go to the conception of dicks.
All right, we're gay. People keep asking us.
No way.
Gay. Cancel this interview.
Cancel it.
No, I want to hear about like how did you come up with the idea of a dick? Like where did it all start? Did it come from Aaron? Did it come from Josh? How did this all come about from day one? Pre-day one.
Josh and I had been doing improvisational comedy together, and we also—
Embarrassing to admit.
Yes, yes. Very brave to admit.
Very brave to admit.
And we also had a variety show where we would book a lot of gay comics or straight women that we liked. And then and then we were like, we really want to write a narrative two-person musical. And really, the movie is sort of loosely uses the framework of The Parent Trap. And one of us, we can't even remember who truly, one of us was like, you know, if we each played a twin and then each played one of the parents, it's basically just a bunch of two-person scenes. So we could use The Parent Trap as sort of as a bones structure for this musical. And that's how it came about. It wasn't even, I mean, we both do love The Parent Trap, but it wasn't out of this deep love. It was
art was born out of necessity and logistics. Yeah.
Right.
So we want to be able to play this clump style, as they call it in the business, where you jump around and play all the parts, and The Parent Trap really worked for that structure.
But yeah, that's how it was conceived.
And at the time was called Fucking Identical Twins, got changed to Dicks sort of late in the game, like rather recently when theater said we will not show it with that title. So
why not?
Yeah.
You know, you'll have to ask AMC that. I can't speak for them.
I got a lot of questions for AMC. We got some business dealings. There's another movie that's about to come out, Beyonce. So I need to see what's happening there too.
And
so
we all need to be at that. Talk about.
We do. I mean, yeah, having that clump style, did you guys feel any pressure that you were going to be jumping around? And we're going to use that title from now on, clump style. Like,
it is.
Playing all of those type of characters, did you feel like...
No, because again, we were just like, when we were doing this in a literal basement of a grocery store, it was just so low stakes. It was like, I feel like we wrote this show for ourselves with Carl, and we just were like, we were all like, let's just do a thing that makes us laugh, that feels crazy, and then like an audience responded to it. People keep asking, they're like, when you were doing it off-Broadway again, lies, they're like, were you thinking of it as a movie? We were like, fuck no. We were just doing this like crazy gay show for, you know, that found its audience. So yeah, it was like, there was not a lot of thought of stuff like that. It was just like the vibes at that era of UCB were very sort of like punk and anarchic and alt and like, you know, just swing for the fences and go for it and do what makes you laugh.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we were definitely laughing the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So earlier you mentioned that you did the show for negative money, and I know that's so real. And so for our young actors and one of the musicians who are listening and what have you, how did you guys survive doing what you love, performing, making people laugh, but like not having any money?
He also asked that question for us on the call.
Right, for personal reasons.
Mama, I had side hustles until recently. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like the whole time you had side hustles, really. I don't know what Aaron and Carl's experience was, but...
I taught improv. I waited tables.
You just make it work.
Yeah.
I was a temp. I was an office manager. I was a live stream producer. I was a web developer. I did everything.
Yeah. I taught special ed. I tutored the SAT. We did all sorts of stuff, you know, and people know this. It's like, it's hustle. It's like the bummer of this industry, right? Of course, but you have to just sort of like, you gotta, if you want to do it, you gotta fucking do it. And you have to sort of trust you'll make it work. And of course you gotta like take care of yourself and like make sure you can pay your rent sometimes. And I think sometimes people want to just fully be like art before everything. And when you're coming up, you like have to balance that with your ability to survive, because you're not going to make anything if you can't survive, you know, but
exactly.
You do have to just sort of blindly believe that one day it'll work out.
You know, and like I found myself saying this to someone else today, like I think another thing that kind of worked is the fact that we didn't have any financial considerations
yes.
or like anyone mm-hmm. to please. And so, and I think one of the things that really worked was just our collaboration and our relationship. So like, totally. I'd say to people, like, try to work with people that you want to work with again.
Exactly.
Like, be motivated by your relationships more than like, oh, who can get me like a seat at the table? You know, I mean, that's one way to go about things, but that's never gotten me.
No, it's 1,000%. I think it's like, what's fun about the movie is so much of this movie, if you'd like pitched it as a movie, you'd be like, well, fuck no. But because a lot of the DNA like came about as this crazy little stage show we were doing for Queer in New York, that then like that became a proof of concept to sort of translate into a film. You got to like do things and get away with things that I think if you were in a pitch room being like, so the movie is this, they'd be like, no way. And like most of this was crafted when we weren't even thinking of it as that. It was just like what feels like funny and queer and crazy, you know?
So our advice to young up and coming artists is to meet people you like and do shows in the basement of a grocery store with them.
Yeah.
Solid advice.
Yeah. And most hard R-rated comedies were born out of children's theater. That's the other note. A lot of those collaborators met doing children's theater.
That is, I've definitely heard that before. And it, literally. You know, this is kind of a good discussion when we're talking about money and everything. Obviously, we all know that there's two current strikes underway. One has luckily just ended, the writer strike. I'm actually going to a strike picketing tomorrow, you know, for SAG, you know, hopefully everything's at the table. So what was your guys' response to that? And like thinking about that now, do you wish that things maybe would have been different in terms of the funding? Do you feel like the studios were okay? Like, what are your thoughts on kind of what's going on with everything?
Well, so much, like, you know, we shot this movie pre-strike, so all the like funding and stuff was secured before any of that. But like, the only reason we're able to talk to you now, even with the writer's strike resolved, is because, like you're saying, the actor's strike is still being resolved. And hopefully, finally, there's progress at this moment, thank God. But you know, we, a couple weeks ago, basically got an interim contract with SAG because A24, who we're working with, is an independent company. And they basically were able to like meet all the demands of SAG that a $1 trillion tech company wouldn't. So it's like, it's totally possible. It just takes the willpower. And that does speak to like, I think a movie like this only gets made with a crazy company that wants to like take risks and make stuff like that. You know, so like, I think it's definitely, you know, we feel very blessed that we've gotten to be out here like promoting what with that interim contract. But most of like making the movie was happening pre-strike, so like a lot of like securing funding and stuff you know, was just like only a company like this would spend the money on a movie as crazy as this, which also makes sense why they were the only ones to be like, or one of the few that were like, we will meet the actor's demands. We're not just like, you know, we don't make iPhones and then also TV.
right
damn,
okay, speak on it.
Speaking of specific people out there.
I heard a rumor, I don't even know if this is true, but that Apple, like any original Apple content, the bad guys are not allowed to have iPhones or use Apple products. They use so like if you watch it, they use like droids and Android.
They've been using like little Blackberries, like
don't you love? I love that.
And I heard in every Disney movie, the villain is always like, I'm off to Six Flags right now. I just came from Six Flags, my favorite Six Flags. I'm a villain.
That's Busch Gardens. Is that so real?
I think so.
I think so.
I think it is. So I have a question that is going to be a spoiler alert. So for our listeners.
We're gay. We told you. Oh my God.
Our listeners, just mute yourselves for 30
scream
seconds.
For the next 4 minutes.
Yeah. Aaron and Josh, how was it to essentially have sex with each other?
Our characters make love in the film.
Okay.
And it's very funny because if you've seen the movie, it is not I would not call it like sentimental or realistic sex. I would say it's more like stunt work than
I don't know. There are some freaky fools out there these days.
There are freaky fools.
I'll say that.
And I celebrate them. But I would say the awkwardness was not like, oh God, we have to like do this romantic sex scene with your friend. It was more like, okay, I have to lift my friend upside down and carry them across the room, and I don't want to break his neck.
We had to make them change the shoot schedule to have it be our last shot because we were like, I'm worried I'm going to hurt myself. Like, I'm going to go for it. And so we were like, you have to do that last because I want to not hold back. So it was more gymnastics than anything.
But we are both blessed with very little dignity. So that was an easy moment to do. And we were proud to do it.
Carl, do you feel the same way? I feel like that's maybe why we're collaborators.
I was going to ask Carl's opinion, his POV on this.
didn't you two introduce yourself to UCB crowds as comedy partners and two-time sexual partners?
Well, everyone's made a mistake twice.
Come on, this is part of being gay. I know that's right.
Yeah. It does fall into that happen. So, Carl, like knowing this and knowing that this was gonna kind of be the end result, and you know, you helped craft this. What did you think? Like, people are gonna see these two characters who redacted because I won't say the relationship until people see it have sex. What did you think? You were like, okay, we're gonna go for this.
I think it's beautiful, just like everything else that happens at the end of the movie. You know.
Do you see like this collab, this three collab? It's like you go shopping with that one friend who's like, buy it, buy it. I think we were all that way to each other. Like,
just do it. Just do whatever.
You know, I will say Josh, I had worked with you and Aaron. Incidentally, I knew Aaron's sister before I knew
Who plays the nun in the film.
The nun.
Tammy.
Oh. My first time meeting Amy Jo, I was at one of her parties and I had bogarted the bathroom to blow a guy for like 5 minutes. So then I met Aaron.
I hear that, sis. Sometimes you just got to get to the bathroom to do what you got to do. I know. Yeah, I get it.
Wait, what was the question again?
What was it? You're going back to that moment in time. You got distracted.
This is a fun cycle.
Yes. So I had worked with Josh before. I mean, and you know, like the children's theater we were doing was very physical comedy and everything. But for the most part, like I wasn't there for like the blocking and stuff of fucking twins. I kind of just like met up with you guys for like a few meetings at Cap 21, and then I think you had even started doing the run of the show, and I had never seen it. And I remember because I don't remember what was going on. I was just busy or something. But
you're probably bogarting bathrooms. That's
We know were double booked. We know.
I mean, joke about not getting paid, but I do remember Carl, like, because we had to have a pianist there to play. And Carl was like, I can't do it for free. I have to work at night. I have to do gigs. Like,
totally, so I get
Carl didn't even get to see it for a while because it's just like, oh, yeah, I can't do it for free. And we were like, totally.
This was our volunteer internship for many years, you know?
But you know, like, but it was the first time I did see it. I think you had done it maybe 2 or 3 times or something. I mean, you had gotten past, you know, it had gotten programmed at UCB by that point. And it was the scene in the restaurant with the like the wheelchair sex where I was like, oh, like it's that kind of show. Okay. Like, I mean, I just, you know, that was the moment where the piece opened up for me.
We used to do a thing because, you know, there's a big, the parents have a big sex scene in the restaurant where they destroy everything. And when we would do it on stage, we'd always do this thing where Aaron would get as far away from me on stage as he could, and I would run and try to jump and land on top of the wheelchair. Now, this worked maybe 2 out of every 3 times. A lot of times we were like busting ass, like hurting ourselves. Oh, but it was God, that kind of like very, you know, like,
and then like fucking his face. Yeah.
And I would say they kept that true in the movie. They were like, let's make it a scene where we blow this thing out and destroy everything. And that's what's so fun about like some of these old like bits and jokes.
Yeah.
You would keep the ones that you were like, this joke will play and be even better in a cinematic context. So like in that scene, there's these stunt doubles like crashing through tables and throwing shit everywhere. Like stuff that is like you could only get away with in a movie that feels very true to the DNA of what this thing always was. But it's like, how do you make it cinematic? How do you blow it out? How do you go even crazier?
Was there anything that you're like, I don't know, producers or investors or whatever, like, that's too much, you guys. You went too
far. I mean, everything. But at the same time, sort of nothing, actually. A lot of the conversations, especially with our director, Larry, who we love, who very much gets the piece and always did, it was like, what doesn't work in a movie context? But it was never like, this is too much. In fact, he was always like, this movie needs to go for it at every turn. Like, the audience will know if this movie ever holds back. And so we cannot do that. So we actually never really put on ourselves like, this is too much as it was just like, does this work? You know, like, is there a better version of the joke? But it was always very much like, you got to go for it.
Yeah.
No, and I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to say y'all definitely went for it.
Yeah, it's like
once or twice.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I hear people talking about like whether we earned our right to be as nasty and filthy as we are. And like I just think that's such an interesting like way of framing the process. Because in my mind, like it's not that like you know, if you think about like what South Park does, like South Park, like there's things that they offend everybody, right? Like that's like what we're doing. Like what we're doing is sort of in a strange way, like internally consistent, and it has a perspective that makes sense in its own kind of like warped, surreal way. And those are just like the rules of that world are just that these are filthy, nasty guys and that's just who they are.
Do you know that? Also Aaron and I talk a lot about how it's like, yes, we know this movie is like people talk about it being offensive, but it's like as offensive it is, it's also equally like absurd and stupid and campy. We just like jokes and we like a billion types of jokes and we like to push in like 1,000 different directions and be very like maximalist. And there's also like a, as you all understand, a very queer thing where it's like when you spent your whole life being told you're disgusting, you start to look at the parts that are quote unquote normal and you're like, this is all crazy. So it's like coming from that, it's like I think there's that like John Waters queer sensibility to sort of delight in what's profane because you have been called profane by society, and also to like look at the parts that are not profane and be like, it's all nuts, you know. So it's it's, and doing it from a place that feels very joyful and not mean-spirited, you know, that it's like, even when we're being naughty, it's like, it's fun. Do it from a place of fun and not from a place of like, you know, hate or spite, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ashley, don't you guys call me the profane and the defiler? Is that what y'all use?
That is your name, Valak.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The nun. That is Darrell.
Defiler is so good.
The Marquis of Snakes.
Honestly.
The Marquis of Snakes.
The Marquis of Snakes.
The Marquis of Snakes.
Wow. Oh, fabulous.
Thank you.
I have a question and kind of a spoiler too. How and why?
They're gay, Ashley. They are gay.
I was just trying to see if maybe they would change their answer. No.
Yeah.
The Sewer Boys.
Yeah.
How, why, how did that come about? Because it's like out there, but it fits. I was just like, how did they come up with this?
In the stage show, it was a throwaway joke. It was just like, we like the idea that the dad is like calling things gay culture that are clearly not gay culture.
Right.
And so he just like, he said it as a line and you just moved right on. And then when we were making a movie, again, that's the thing where we're like, well, we have to see them and they have to be, you have to be puppets and they have to go on a big adventure. But, oh, you know.
But yeah, we love them. And you know, they just walked into the room and they auditioned and they were both really, really strong. Strong little actors. And we're just thrilled to work with them.
Oh, a lot of people read for those parts, but they were really authentic. And it's about representation to actually cast Sewer Boys as Sewer Boys.
Y'all didn't call me back. Experience. I auditioned for the Sewer Boys and y'all did not call me back. So
it was such, it was a, it was.
You were so close. You were so close.
It was a stacked group of actors came in and read for
us. We had it down to you and Chalamet. You were up there, but then we had to go.
I was right there. Great.
We had to go with Backpack and Whisper. They just really, it felt very lived in what they were doing.
Yeah.
I will tell you, kind of on a serious note, this movie did actually do something else for me. Someone who's a friend of mine who was in your film who passed away, Sonya Eddy.
Oh my God, Sonya!
To be able to see her last cinematic appearance. We worked together on General Hospital, and her and I had been in contact through years. And I was just like, I've never, you know, like, obviously her story stopped on General Hospital when she passed away and they didn't get the film ahead. But to be able to see something else that lived out there that had her spirit and essence in it was fantastic. Yeah. And I cannot thank you guys enough for that, because when she came on the screen, I was floored and it meant the world.
She's so wonderful. And she, I mean, you know, because you've worked with her. Mm-hmm. We were obsessed with her. She just, it lit up the hair and makeup trailer. Everybody so loved funny. Her. Yes. And then she was so good in the movie. And our favorite line, us and then our boyfriends that have seen 1,000, we love Sonya's line. You know, actually, fuck off. It's so good.
And it's so like, intense.
Favorite line of the movie. And then Larry Charles in the credits put in loving memory of Sonya at the very end. And we just loved her. She was truly a light, like a star. And
yeah.
A lot of this movie was very like the Muppets Family Band. Like the mailman is my partner. The nun is Aaron's sister. You know, like we've got friends who
Carl's a cameo.
The garbage man did children's theater with Carl and I. Like even Nick Offerman is like Megan's husband. Like we were always like including people we knew. And that was one of the very few parts where we were like, oh, we should just like audition some people. And I remember like sitting and watching these videos with Larry and being like, who the fuck right is away, this woman? Right like away. We loved her. Yeah. We loved her.
Yeah, her, so cool her singing, her, her voice will be missed. But again, to see that and to and I know that she would have loved that being the last thing that she did, because she to sit and talk and to hear that woman's story is like she was wild. So
she was wild. Yeah, that was sweet. Absolutely amazing. We loved her. I'm so happy she got to be in the movie. And I hope her family sees it and loves it. She is so good in it.
And I'm just glad I got to know her. I mean, we feel like about a lot of this movie, like I'm so happy with the movie, but I just like loved getting to meet all these people and getting to work with them. And it was like such a fun vibe, everybody together. We were on this stage, you know, we weren't on like a big Warner Brother lot where you're sharing it with nine other things. It was just us. So every single person that worked there was on our movie, and it felt like this weird little summer camp. So the vibes were like so fun. And Sonya was one of those people where I'm like, I'm just glad I got to know you. Like, we got to share some space on this rock, you know?
Yeah.
Where did you guys film? Where was the set?
Sun Valley.
LA people, it's like LA people would be like, I didn't know Lakersham Boulevard went this far. You were like 4 miles from a Starbucks. It was out in the middle of nowhere.
It looks like Halloween out there.
Halloween. Yeah. It was in the middle of nowhere.
Nice. That is crazy. All right, so now I want to get into some tea.
Oh, no.
Now, did y'all happen to ask Megan why her and Deborah Messing hate each other and why they couldn't finish Will and Grace?
Darrell, you are messy.
Darrell, you got to have
Not Brayden turning his camera off. Come back, Brayden.
I need to know. You got to have her on.
Yeah. Listen, I just thought
I'm not participating in this conversation.
No, listen.
Well, did you see?
I just wanted to know.
Here's one thing that you might ask her too. In her press material, she talks about how she filmed for Blue Velvet, but then her character was cut. That's the story I want to hear.
Wow.
Me too. See, I want to know the tea. Like that. But, yeah. So, on a serious note, were there any stories that Nathan or Megan told you guys on set that was like from their past roles and stuff? Just like any Hollywood stories, anything that they like.
We used to just tee up Nathan all day long. We'd be like, tell us about this. And he just, you know, it was just a delight to be with these legends.
One time we were at dinner at Megan Mullally's house, and Megan had worked with Elaine Stritch and so had Nathan Lane. So they were just like trading Elaine Stritch stories. And we, Josh and I were just like face melting, like
squeezing each other's thighs under the table.
I would love to be a fly on the wall.
I know it was so fun. And then Larry and those two had also all worked with Mel Brooks. So one time we're like doing a table read of some scene, and they're all talking about Mel Brooks, and we're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, it just so, like talking about actual legends, and then working with it was really, really cool. It was really very showbiz.
Yeah, and I It's not normal that a composer in my position would get to be on set, but I got to be the rehearsal pianist, so I got to be all the rehearsals and shooting and everything.
Because we sang a lot of it live. We sang a lot of the movie live, which is crazy. And Carl would be playing. We'd have a little earpiece in our ear, and Carl would be playing the piano.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. How did y'all keep from like not dying laughing in every take? Because every time Megan Mullally like opened her mouth with that like with like her speech, and I was just like dying. I was like, she is so stupid in the best way. Like I was just laughing. I was like, I can't. I wouldn't be able to make it on set.
Like Josh and I have been doing it for so long that we know every line. So while we still think it's funny, it is just very like, this is the job. but then, you know, you were breaking with Megan and Nathan, and we would break, but we shot the whole movie in 20 days. So it was just like, we got to get this motherfucker in the can, you know? So like while we had, it was so much fun, but it was like, you got to get to work because we don't have a lot of time. But it was a blast.
Were there any moments that Megan or Nathan were like, no, man, I can't do that? I mean, you got Nathan to defeat
that
children. So that went pretty far. But were there any moments where either Megan or Nathan were like, nah, dude, I can't do that?
I think Megan will literally do anything in the world. She's
Nathan, that sounds about right.
Nathan will do anything, but he has to be like, I don't know, and then he'll do it.
But he has to be like, what the fuck are we doing? And then you're like rolling, and he goes 110%.
Yeah.
I love that.
They're both
I love that you guys included some of that, some of like behind the scenes when in the credits. Like I love the
scene. Yeah, kind of like that was so much fun.
When he was feeding, he's like, "What the fuck? I'm gonna stop doing
this." He's like, "I guess this is my career now."
Yeah, that was so funny.
We keep teasing him because he loves to say that he hates the sewer boys, and I think he actually does, but we keep saying he's gonna get a Kennedy Center honors and they have to come on and like present.
He's gonna be like, there they are again. Oh god.
They're gonna follow
him. So Carl,
him.
When you were writing the music and you knew you would be writing a song for Megan Thee Stallion, did that change your direction of how you were writing? Did you give it a little bit more of a hit?
Did she have a hand in the writing?
Wow.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. That's for Marius to address. I wrote a cabaret number for my friend Victoria to sing. It was a very like powerful, tricky number. And you kind of hear little elements of that, but Marius and Josh, I credit with mostly making
and Aaron.
Happen. And of course Aaron. And yeah, the three of them. I mean, I contributed one line to that and I kind of produced the bridge musically.
Yeah.
By and large, that was like Marius's brainchild.
It felt like a very showbiz day where we had this other song that was sort of like we knew we would cast this part and write a song to them. So it was like, maybe this is a placeholder song. Like maybe we'll have to rewrite it to whoever does it. And then there was a day where it's like, okay, you got to turn it into a Megan Thee Stallion song. And so we were all just.
Like, was it like 45 minutes that we had? It was something crazy where like, the only time that they could get the four of us and Fiora in a room was like 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Wow.
On a day when like they started shooting at 9.
We have, it was so wild. But that's actually one of the parts that I'm most proud of is that we all got together and it was just like this crazy think tank where we had this kind of placeholder song, but it was like, okay, now this has to become a Megan Thee Stallion song because this is not a Megan Thee Stallion song. And we all just, Marius was able to figure out how to like break it up so it's like, oh, this will be verse chorus and like and then it's like now Josh and Aaron write different lyrics because so it's like you'd steal like, okay, this idea will work, but now we have to like make it a hip-hop song, a Megan Thee Stallion song. And but it was really fun.
I carry as a point of pride that when she came, first of all, we sent her this demo of it and we're like, she'll probably change a bunch, and she changed like nothing. She was just like, I'm gonna do it. And then when she came in, she was like, you know, I'm dirty, but y'all are dirty.
That must have been a proud moment, actually.
It was like, game sees game.
I will say, though, I think her song really fit really well into the world that you guys had already created, like thematically, musicality. I thought it was like blended in perfectly.
Thanks.
Yeah, and she was just so game to be like, do whatever. Like she, I mean, obviously she's putting Megan Thee Stallion in it, but the same way that like Nathan's putting Nathan, like everybody's sort of being themselves doing this stuff, but she was very much like, we were throwing all sorts of dumb jokes at her, and she's like, let's do it. Like, she didn't have a single moment of being like, is this too crazy or stupid or too whatever. She was just like, I want to do what y'all want to do.
So committed.
People forget she's a theater girl. Like, people forget that she has that background, and, you know, she's so much. And listen, for you two guys, and I know Braden and Ashley and will agree, we were saying y'all's vocals were tight.
Oh, like, yes.
Thank you.
And we sang most of our stuff live, actually, Aaron and I. I mean, it was really good.
Mind-blowing to me. About, like,
yeah. Like, I was like, okay. I see y'all. Vocals were tight and crisp.
Someone called them creamy boy harmonies.
Creamy boy? Wow.
Creamy boy harmonies.
Wow.
That's disgusting. That's the most disgusting sounding thing I've heard.
Okay, so. Oh,
go ahead, Ashley.
No, I was going to say, can we expect a Dix musical too?
That's what I was going to ask.
Ah, we're on the same page.
Well, it only took us 10 years to get this one made. So, set your calendar for 2033.
We joke that it has to be a Christmas special.
Yes.
So they can all be Christmas songs.
Yes.
Yes.
That is perfect.
Talk to A24. Talk
Frosty
to
Frosty the Snow Ho. That would be great. We got some songs.
Frosty the Snow Ho, yeah.
If you want a sequel, you better show up to theaters and buy some tickets. Or
yes.
Merch. You better buy merch, too.
Yes. Where can we find merch? I know the movie comes out Friday, October 6th, which everyone please go and see it. But where can we find some merch?
A24 will start doing it on their website, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know when it comes out, but they're good at the merch game, so I feel like it'll be rolling out. And yeah, Friday is New York and LA, and they recently added San Francisco. Yep. Wonder what it is about San Francisco that made them think maybe it would play well there.
Gay.
Probably all.
Okay, well, let's bring that up, Josh, since you put that on the table. What do you think, guys, about what's been happening with Folsom and San Francisco and everything that's kind of been going on? Because that's been a big topic in the past couple of weeks, and people are wanting to shut that down completely because they're like, you know, children are seeing it. And I mean,
I'm not on Twitter, so I don't really know the discourse. I just heard a little bit, but I say, let the girls do what they do. It's on the street, but don't you have to buy a ticket and go in and it's private?
Yeah, you do. And to be fair, children cannot see it. It's all blocked off.
Yeah.
No one can go into that area. But of course, people are going to cry.
I mean, like, listen, like, not every space in the world needs to be child safe.
Hello.
I agree.
Hello. How do we do the two exclamation point emoji?
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Now, I think children should come to this film, though. I'll say that. This is a family film.
It's a family film.
It's a family film.
I do. I agree.
It is. Y'all are spreading love. That is like the main part of your movie is love. Love is love.
You're spreading a lot more than love, Ashley.
Yeah. Okay, extras.
I was happy to see the spread for sure. It made my day. I promised that when you guys, honestly, listen, it's all my fault. I promised when you guys got on here, I wasn't going to flirt, but I had to. Y'all are all amazing, so it's what happened.
What did they say they call you? The deviant? What was it, Ashley?
The defiler.
The defiler. The Marquis of Snakes.
Oh, I thought you were saying nail filer. I get it now.
Braden, come on now.
Gabriel, you call that flirting? That was not flirting. That's just
me. Braden, they've been smiling at me this whole interview, and they haven't been smiling at you, so don't start.
Yeah, I have this Zoom in gallery view mode. So
I do too. I can see it.
Anyway, guys, they're smiling at me, okay?
Yeah, so. Sorry. We've been flirting with Ashley.
Hello, because they're not gay.
I just thought, what if A24 made like a fake pussy and had that and they as one of the merch? Like, what would happen? Yeah.
I think it'd be a good Christmas ornament.
I think it would be a great. I think everyone would. I think everyone would rise up in joy if A24 released a pussy.
Putting that in the universe. Pussy merch.
Pussy advent calendar. So
there we go.
Days of pussy.
Mm-hmm. Really?
You can never have enough pussy.
Please hire me. My creativity is on point tonight.
You are.
I love it. So, guys, what's next for you? Like, what are you thinking next? Obviously, you know, hopefully we get a Dix 2. That would be Dix 2, the musical.
Two Dix.
But what do you. Two Dix, one musical. Maybe we'll work on it. What do you guys think?
I'm not even hedging. I truly have only been thinking about, like, it's been so long getting this movie out. So the fact that it's finally out, I'm on this ride right now, and I love being on it, and I can't wait for it to come out in the world.
I truly hear that.
People ask that. I'm like, nothing's next. I'm in this right now.
And we are on strike.
And we're also on strike as actors.
Right.
I won't lie, Josh. I didn't hear you at first. It sounded like you said you're edging, but then I understand you said hedging. So, like, I got you.
A bit of both.
So I agree with that. Being in the moment and being in the time is really important. And I really do hope everyone go out and see this movie. It was fantastic. We really did love it. We are going to go see it again when I get back to New York. We're going to go together again and see
it
because it was really fantastic. So, guys, before we let you guys go, I feel like we could do this all day with you guys. And you guys have to come back.
Absolutely.
You have to.
Please.
Have us.
Yeah, so tell us where they can find, where our listeners can go and follow you on all social media to find out what's happening in your lives and what's next. And then we'll remind them to go check out the movie this Friday on October 6th at AMC Theaters.
I am on the app Instagram as Garbage Troll, and that's where you can find me.
And I am also only on the app Instagram as Cluck Cluck Josh Sharp. That's the sound a chicken makes, and then Josh Sharp.
I love that.
And I'm on Instagram, and it's Carl with a K, Saint spelled out, and then Lucy, just like the name Lucy, not like anything crazy.
And yes, this Friday the 6th, New York, LA, San Francisco. The next week it rolls out in a few more towns, and then the 20th is when it goes nationwide. So even if you're like, I don't live in New York and LA or San Francisco, my rent is reasonable. Don't worry, we're coming for you in 2 weeks.
We're going to take some of your rent.
We're coming for you in 2 weeks. And truly, I know you said it, but I hope this is a runaway hit and that straight people find joy in it. But we really did make this movie for, like, queers to scream at the screen together, you know? So I do hope, like, people in this community like this movie and just, like, want to get their girls out to the theaters and sneak a bottle of wine in their backpack and cut up, you know?
That's literally
what they tell you. I feel targeted.
I feel seen. I feel seen.
Yeah, two bottles.
Yeah.
Well, then our director, Larry Charles, who we love, who's not a queer person, he was like, this film is for truants and deviants. I think you should skip school to see it. And we're like, you get it, baby. You get that allyship.
Absolutely.
That's allyship.
And I'll say, we were sitting in there in the press room watching it with a lot of people, and there were, like, straight people there, and they were laughing and they enjoyed it. So I really do think that.
Wow.
Be able to connect to this film. Like, it was the room, there was not, it wasn't quiet in the room at all because there was so much laughter going on.
I mean, we made it for everybody because it's just tons of jokes, but as you know, we hoodwinked a lot of gay shit in there. There's a lot of Trojan horse
just a little bit
Well, thank you all so much. This has been so much fun. We've been quoting the lines and singing the song since we've seen it.
Yes,
I can't wait to see it again. Oh my goodness.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
of course. And we will see you guys next time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Pride fam. We would love to hear from you. So please feel free to email us at pridetheseries@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at pridethepodcast. Can't wait to hear from you all. And remember to celebrate Pride 365.
All right, welcome back. Wow.
Yay.
What wonderful dicks.
My face hurts. My face, my jaw, my cheeks.
From just smiling.
Smiling and laughing. They are so funny.
Yeah.
They are so funny. And I love that, you know, Aaron, you know, he taught improv and everything. And improv is very, very difficult. I've talked so long about how it's my least favorite thing to do as an actor. And they're so good at it.
Yeah, it's a surprise that they are just now, like, coming out, like, mainstream. Like, I feel like they should have, with their off Broadway.
to the night power.
Right, but no, they were so much fun. Ooh, we would get in some trouble if we were hanging out in real life.
No,
yeah, like that.
We would be. I mean, I'm about to hit them up. I'm still in LA. I'm like, I'm still here. What y'all do? Because, like, I just feel like I am. Some trouble could occur. You know, I love a good, like, dinner, brunch, lunch situation.
Yes, Valak.
Valak is at it again. This has been so good. I'm glad I got to like connect back with you guys. It feels so crazy, like we're all spread out. I called Ashley earlier. I was like, we have separation anxiety. I haven't seen y'all. And Brady act like he don't miss me. Come texting me, talking about, Gramps, when you back, sis, on the East Coast.
And I was like, I was just making sure that I knew what my schedule was doing, because the day you get back, the day I leave, thank God.
Where are you going?
I'm going to LA. Me and Darrell will wave to each other in the sky.
Oh.
But you're only gone for a few days, right?
Yes, ma'am.
You're going for work?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Oogie. Yeah.
His date is back quick. I think I got a circle, so I'll be ready to get back with him. In the meanwhile, I did want to let everyone out there know, Teresa Kelton, who is one of the producers of the podcast at Rehab Entertainment, does have a book out called What Was I Doing? It is a daily planner for scatterbrains featuring word searches with a decade theme and decade themed coloring pages. So,
amazing is that?
Amazing.
I had no idea.
And neither did I. I got here and I was like, she's like, yeah, my book got published today. And I said, what's
your what?
I called, I asked him immediately. God. I said, Teresa got a book.
Teresa, so doing secrets.
Doing secrets. So, everyone, the book is available on Amazon now. You can go on their shop. Please go order it. What Was I Doing? And by author T.K. Qualls.
Darrell, will you do me a favor? Will you bring me back an autographed copy? I want Teresa to autograph.
Oh, that's nice. I want that.
Yes. I can put in a request.
Yes, I'll still buy like one off of Amazon, but I want a signed one.
Yeah, Charles is good, because you know Charles has that 90s place. So Charles is getting them to put in his 90s themed Airbnb.
That's so smart. Charles is ridiculous. Collaborating.
I love it. It's all about, and I mean, we saw it with Josh and Carl, and I mean, Aaron, they all collaborated, and look at what they made. So yeah. I think it just goes to show to stick with your friends, and eventually you'll get to where you're going.
Yikes.
And where we're going is we are going to go have drinks and we're going to go have dinner. So thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode of Pride the Podcast. You can follow me. I am Darrell Anthony on Instagram, Darrell Anthony on Facebook, and Twitter is actually pretty safe for work now since I don't have a job. Continue.
Shouldn't it be the opposite? Oh, wait. It's you don't have a job.
I can. Correct. I don't. So I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Right. But it's not safe for work. People who are working.
Or other people.
Right.
For other people, it might be a little itchy. But for me, it's great.
Oh, my God. I'm Mr. Brayden Bradley. You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Brayden Bradley. Or check out my website, BraydenBradley.com, for professional inquiries.
For the professional shawties.
And you can follow me, Ashley, at Ashley Aaron M on all social media. And you can also follow Adam at Adam Rios with a zero on Instagram and Box Wine Poppy with a zero on Twitter/X. And you can follow Io on The Fabulous Spinster on Instagram and Twitter.
Damn, you're I don't know Adams and Io's professional representation was on the pod today.
Okay, right. You know.
And also, go and check out our website, pridetheseries.com. You can see all of our old podcast episodes. You can see all of our old series episodes. Like, you can go check it out, follow us, like us. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. So thank you guys again. And make sure you go check out Dixter Musical in theaters October 6th.
And worldwide October 20th. Yeah.
Yes, there you go. Bye.
Bye.